Feelings. Nothing more than feelings. Trying to forget my feelings of zombie takeout.
What's up? Welcome to episode 315 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted. This is an anonymous voicemail. Let's take a listen.
Feelings. Nothing more than feelings. Trying to forget my...
Okay, that's enough of that.
Yeah.
And now we have a voicemail from Bodo.
Hey, Bodo here. Damn, Chuck Barris died. I did not hear anything about it until you guys mentioned it. Wow, devastating. Yeah, I love that show. I was surprised it was only on for 4 years. Love Gene, the Dancing Machine, and the Unknown Comic. And, of course, J.P. Morgan. Oh, my God. I was in love with that woman. Of course, Jamie Farr. I always remember him on the show. I was looking at some facts about the show, and you know Pee Wee Herman was on the show about 15 times? He was a regular. He won money a couple times. So if you wanted to make it a trilogy, maybe you could do one of Pee Wee's movies. That may be going out on a limb. Anyway, keep up the great work. Love the show. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thanks, Bodo.
Chuck.
Yeah. I think we'll pass on the Pee Wee movie. We might do his movies at a later date. They kind of do fit us.
Could definitely see us doing a Pee Wee movie in the future.
But want to keep this particular roundabout, Chuck. By the way, given what you said about J.P. Morgan, you probably definitely want to see this movie if you haven't.
Well, you know, that clip has been online.
It's on YouTube, yeah. But they pause on it very nicely in the movie.
They do.
Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 1980, The Gong Show Movie. As previously mentioned, this is our Chuck Barris tribute, part one of our Chuck Barris tribute, continuing next week with, well, we'll get to the exact movie. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Feelings. Nothing more than feelings. Trying to forget my feelings of love.
And also brought to you by Teardrops, rolling down on my face, trying to forget my feelings of love. All right, so we've got a... Well, I don't know if you can call it a variety show, a game show, but he is the host of this gong show.
Kind of the template for America's Got Talent.
It's a template for reality TV,
that's
really.
It. Yeah.
And he is just exhausted with the whole thing. Now, of course, keep all of this in mind about, oh, you look tired, Chuck, that you hear throughout the entire thing with the movie we're going to do next week.
Yeah.
That offers a different explanation as to why he was so tired all the time.
And possibly why he was really bruised up in one episode.
And late, and yes. Why he was bruised up and where he is, and then right. There's a different explanation offered that who knows? Who knows? But anyway, he's burnt out from this, partially because everywhere he goes, people audition, they're terrible acts for him, and they just don't get the show, of course. It's bad, but it's supposed to be funny at the same time, too.
Or it's just weird and really talented. That was sort of half of it as well.
That's true, too. You're weird and really talented. So they brilliantly combine clips from auditions... Mm-hmm. Clips from the show that couldn't quite make it to the air.
Or were censored.
Yeah, they were very heavily censored. And in between this plot of him, you know, being burnt out and trying to find his... I don't know what he was really trying to find in the end. But
I think he was just trying to get some peace and quiet.
Yeah, so he eventually, of course, shuns society. But of course, that does not work. And hilarity ensues.
Hmm. And this movie really kind of looks like a TV movie, like it was shot on video.
Oh, yeah, very much so. The titles and everything. Yeah. It's like an episode of Murder, She Wrote or something.
Which kind of fits the feel of it.
Yeah.
Because it's not a normal movie. It's kind of all over the place in a lot of respects.
Oh, it very much is. It's very much like The Gong Show itself. Uh-huh.
And it was really, I think, ahead of its time, because there are parts of it that remind me a lot of the Zuckers and Amazon Women.
I think Howard Stern completely took this to make Private Parts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess a lot of people had forgotten this movie existed when he did that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people forgot this movie existed shortly after it was released. The film failed at the box office, not helped by its having opened the same weekend as Empire Strikes Back and The Shining.
Now, who came up with that idea to open opposite of Empire Strikes Back?
And it's not like it's a new hope where, you know, they didn't know how well it was going to do. It was Empire. There was precedent.
I guess, you know what? It's not as much of a crime that they opened up against Empire Strikes Back. But who the fuck decided to open The Shining?
Yeah, because that's a very similar demo. The film received a negative reaction and was quickly withdrawn from theatrical release. Among the bad reviews at the time, George Burns, after seeing the movie, went on the record saying, "For the first time in 65 years, I wanted to get out of show business." Now, he very well may have been joking. I mean, that was Burns' sense of humor.
Because, come on, he remembers vaudeville.
Yeah. But I think this is another case like Dude, Where's My Car? And Last Action Hero, where it's a movie that we're going to like that nobody else does.
I mean, a lot like UHF also.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Which is very reminiscent of.
Yeah, I think they took a lot from that. So.
Yeah, well, UHF borrowed a lot from this, even though it's only a few years. And this movie takes a day in the life very literally.
Right.
Because it starts with him waking up when his alarm goes off. And I loved his just complete and utter, you know, nihilism when he gets up, because I'm very much like that. Loved the Chuck Berry joke. Someone approaches him and said, what was the name they used on for him?
Oh, it was something completely off.
Yeah, something Berry was the last name, but it was a different first name completely. And he said, no, I'm Chuck Berry, which, you know, in context was great, but also, you know, now, given that they died like 2 days apart from each other.
They were always confused, though.
Yeah.
Like, the names were always mixed
they're,
up.
They're too similar, you know.
Right. I don't know if he did that intentionally, or, I mean, because he was in the music industry, too. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't mention this. I mean, he's the guy that wrote the song Palisades Park.
And he wrote all of the songs in the movie.
Well, yeah, of course, there's that, too. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Palisades Park was, you know, kind of, I mean, it's not like a Chuck Berry single, you know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was still a hit single, and it was in the music industry, and it had a life. I mean, it was covered by the Ramones later in the 70s.
I think that's the only one I know, is the Ramones version. I actually really didn't know he was a musician until I did my research, and I remember him playing guitar, you know, during some musical acts. You know, he had the Les Paul, you know, sitting right next to him on the stage most episodes. But I didn't know he was like a serious musician until I did my research for this and found out he had written quite a few popular songs, or at least one very popular song.
You don't remember Palisades Park? Because I think they used it for like an ad for like the amusement park. or like even Action Park, I think, may have even used it once.
Okay. I mostly know the Ramones version. And you know, getting back to the movie, I loved the parade of hopefuls that ended up following him. He picks up, you know, the old guy who thought he was, you know, whatever, Berry. And he walks in and there's this, you know, vocal group who, you know, confronts him and tries to audition. Gets in the elevator with them and the old guy. And then by the time he gets to the office, there's like 20 people following him. All trying to audition. Which leads to a great montage of these incredibly bizarre auditions.
Some pretty famous people in those auditions too, or they may not have been at the time.
Right.
I mean, I spotted him right away. I couldn't remember his name for the life of me, but I had to look it up. It's Taylor Negron.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, wait, this is like way before.
He was like a stand up at this point, just trying to, you know, make a name for himself.
Yeah.
He didn't really get any recognition until the mid-80s. I think that's when I really first heard about him.
Yeah.
And I was watching a lot of Evening at the Improv at the time.
I think they even say Danny DeVito somewhere in there, too.
There's a guy in one of the clips from the show who looks a lot like Danny DeVito, but I took a close look and it wasn't him.
They say Danny DeVito's in there somewhere, though.
I mean, maybe he's some elsewhere in the movie. There's a couple of other interesting cameos. One name that I have in my notes followed by, I think, 10 exclamation points.
Oh, I could guess this. Phil Hartman?
No. Vincent Schiavelli.
Oh.
In the garage when he's accosted by the two guys whose mother was gonged.
Oh, yes, of course.
Love Vincent Schiavelli. So there's him, the Rip Taylor, of course, as the waiter.
You can't have a gong show movie without Rip Taylor in it. Of course. In fact, I mean, why wasn't he one of the judges, you know? Yeah.
They might as well have not put J.P. Morgan in if they weren't going to put Rip Taylor in.
Right.
Although it was more fun to see him in a role instead of just playing himself as a judge.
Yeah. The maitre d'.
Mm-hmm. And of course, as you mentioned, Phil Hartman behind him in line at an airport holding a gun.
Yeah, holy shit. Phil Hartman.
But he's just random guy in this airport holding a gun. Barris doesn't say anything about it. Of course, Hartman's character wants to audition for the gong show. There's no mention of the gun.
5 years before SNL.
Mm-hmm. And I think Airplane kind of borrowed that gag. But this was the same year, wasn't it?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah, because that was a very Airplane gag, where he's just sitting there holding the gun and nobody's acknowledging it.
Let's see. He did, before this movie, he did a voice on Scooby-Doo. An additional voice, not even a character.
Mm-hmm.
Something called the 6 o'clock Follies and Stunt Rock.
Okay. I don't remember either of the other two, obviously Scooby-Doo.
So, yeah, this, and then in the same year, he did Cheech and Chong's next movie, and then the Pee Wee Herman Show.
Which is where everybody first saw him, I think.
Not the Playhouse. It's just called the Pee Wee Herman Show.
Yeah. The stage show that he had, that the Playhouse was based on.
It was like 81, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, back to the movie. All of those clips from the gong show really kind of had me hoping that it could be revived. And then I did a little checking and found out that it was.
Oh, yeah.
In
several
times. Well, there were attempts to continue it in the 80s, but there was also a version from, I think, 2008 with David Sell hosting.
Yeah. You know,
I knew nothing about this.
I heard about it, but never did get to see it. And Dave Attell is a guy who could stand in for Chuck Barris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, just glancing at Phil Hartman's IMDb, did you know he was the voice of Waldo in the video for Hot for Teacher?
Oh, wow.
You know, Ma, I get sweaty and dirty.
Makes sense. And, of course, in the movie, we have lots of the unknown comic.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really appreciated him until I started following him on Twitter. And now watching his old gags in the movie, he was great. I loved the Chianti and prune juice joke.
Well, yeah, I couldn't see.
What do you call Chianti and prune juice? A godfather, because it makes you an offer you can't refuse.
I could see a lot of the jokes that he was telling not make it on the air.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole bit at the end where I think they just let him go, carte blanche, just be as dirty as you want. Which makes you wonder, does the snake have an ass? Also, I loved the hospital scene, speaking of, you know, things that are just wrong. One of the contestants has a heart attack when he gets off stage. He's rushed to the hospital. Chuck and his wife go to visit him, and the guy hops out of bed, takes off his oxygen mask, tries to audition. Then one of the doctors pulls him into a closet, and he's got another doctor at a piano. He auditions. He's got this whole setup. The nurses are, you know, beating down. I think they actually had blackjacks, and they were beating down the guy who was trying to audition.
It's kind of like a Hard Day's Night for bad humor.
Yeah, it's a Hard Day's Night. And also very similar to Head, which obviously was based on Hard Day's Night.
Yeah.
Now, there were a couple of things that kind of came out of nowhere. Chuck's band, the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Apparently he played in a band in the movie anyway. I don't know if he did in real life.
Well, he just, there were a lot of things that he got to work into this movie. Yeah. You know, he got to work in his music career.
But there's this mention of a band that kind of came out of nowhere, but even worse, and I don't mean worse as it bothered me, but more egregiously, there's suddenly the scene with his daughter, who has never been mentioned before, like most of the way through the movie.
She would do intros for the Gong Show.
Oh, she was his actual daughter.
I guess so.
Okay.
Like, at my dad, you know, Chuck Ferris.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned Vincent Schiavelli. He's one of two guys who basically hold him up in his garage because their mother got gonged. And he, you know, to get out of it, offers them a spot on the show. They're apparently singers and comedians.
Love this part.
I kind of loved the Indian nipple. The Indianapolis 500 joke.
Of course, Pat McCormick.
Oh, Pat McCormick, Jamie Farr, you know, Mitzi McCall, all judges, and of course, J.P. Morgan. In her infamous flashing scene.
But I love that, you know, it was Pat McCormick, of course, gongs them, and yeah, he's just like, you're the one that gonged their mother.
Why would you Honestly, all of the clips bought at a brain.
Of course. Yeah, clips were just fucking hilarious. And the auditions, too. Okay. The auditions are just so weird.
Mm-hmm. And all of this, the random weirdness, like Dr. Crawford, the piano player in, you know, with the doctor who pulled him into the closet to audition, shows up toward the end. Actually, he shows up twice. No, he's not at the end. He's in the restaurant when the cook wants to audition. Dr. Crawford just happens to be there.
Yeah, he just happens to be in the kitchen to play piano again. Who knows how many times this piano player shows up because he's wearing a mask the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. I don't think that was him at the end.
No.
And the cook song is really the part that reminded me of the Zuckers. It just had that Zuckers feel, particularly with the chef, or the waiter, rather, who's walking behind him and kind of doing jazz hands. And we also, in one of those clips, see the Popsicle Girls, I believe they were called.
Yes.
And they got through. They were on the air. I was kind of wondering how they got away with that.
Yeah.
But apparently that was like the biggest censor issue the show ever had. And it's also what got Chuck to reconsider his career.
I mean, how did that get on? I mean, if they're taping these and they see this episode, why would they keep that in?
And just to make it perfectly clear, two very attractive young ladies, filleting popsicles.
Most likely underage ladies.
Possibly. They were basically filleting the popsicles.
Yeah.
And if they were underage...
Can you spare a nickel?
Yeah. And if they were underage, that would be even more reason for Barris to reconsider his career.
And I love the way he introduces it to. It's not in the movie, but I mean, if you see the clip online, it's, you know, this next act is full of substance. It's about time we had some substance on this show. So I don't know. I don't know why that would make him want to rethink his career. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, true. True.
What was he?
Well, he knew what he was doing. Maybe in hindsight, he realized, like, okay, we do a lot of weird. We do a lot of, you know, laughing stocks. This is just two young girls filleting popsicles. There's really no substance. You know, it was really kind of
it's fucking hilarious, though.
Yeah. It was really kind of, well, not kids had cash grab because nobody knew it was coming. It's not like they could have promoted it.
Well, right.
I don't know. Maybe it was some kind of limit he thought he had, or he finally realized he had.
Why would he think he had this limit? Maybe they were doing live shows. I don't know. Maybe, but
that's possible.
It's what led them to be on syndication instead of like the regularly scheduled.
Well, the syndication happened, I think, after it was canceled.
I think he got moved from NBC to like a smaller network.
Well, I think in 1978 it was canceled on NBC, and then it went into syndication. Maybe that was the incident that got it canceled. I don't know.
From what I understand, it's what moved it from NBC, but they were still doing new episodes just...
Yes, into syndication. It's not like, you know, we commonly think of syndication as reruns. They were doing new episodes that were being syndicated on different, you know, smaller channels around the country. I also loved Ditlow, the sort of network executive who's all about ratings. He just kind of crawled into their bedroom in one scene.
Right. Now, of course, you know, you expect him to be the adversary from the movie.
Because he kind of is in the beginning. He's talking about ratings and Chuck just wants to be creative. And you think it's going to be that sort of situation.
Right. He's talking about a rating slippage, even though their ratings hadn't gone down at that point.
Right.
But, you know, they're going to, so we're not going to give you a raise.
Yeah, you think he's the bad guy, and then all of a sudden he's just kind of there in a few scenes in a very absurd way. And it right. starts after the restaurant scene, because he's still the bad guy in the restaurant scene.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, in one scene, Chuck and his wife are having breakfast in bed, and Didlow just climbs over the terrace in pajamas.
Well, he really has... He wants to keep the show going, and it turns out, you know, he wants to make sure, I mean, it, not maybe the show Chuck wants to do.
Yeah.
But he wants to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he cares greatly about Chuck.
Yeah. Possibly a bit too much.
Yeah, possibly.
And then later he shows up in the desert with, like, a marching band and, like, everybody who's been on or associated with the show.
Including people that were auditioning
yeah.
and accosting him earlier in the film.
Right.
Are there singing tribute to him.
But the bedroom scene leads to a great montage. And you never hear me put those two words together.
Yeah, great montage.
The waking up montage. You know, Chuck says something like, you know, I can't imagine not waking up to someone I didn't like or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows someone people. And it shows, you know, a headless person waking up, you know, with their other head. JP Morgan waking up with the band. And there was one where I can't remember what it was.
There was the unknown comic.
Oh, yes. Waking up with his wife, who also had a bag on her head. And then a photo. And I'm sure this is pretty well known. At least I think it is. I've seen it on his Twitter account. It's the unknown comic, basically nude in the, you know, what was that magazine that Burt Reynolds posed for?
Playgirl.
Or something. It was another one. But anyway, in that kind of a pose, but, you know, with the bag on his head and the bag over his junk. The fight scene was a bit weird.
Oh, yeah. Intentionally so, of course.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird point in the movie for me. Between the scene with the daughter and the fight scene. Chuck and his wife were walking through this, was it a casino or something?
I'm not sure where
it's some kind of building. They don't really specify what it is.
Yeah.
Kind of felt like a casino for some reason. And
yeah, you're probably right.
And two guys walking past make some disparaging comments about the Gong Show. Chuck shakes it off until they run into them in the parking garage. Chuck confronts the guy and they kind of supposedly fight. But they're just kind of, you know, moving around each other. And then this couple come up and take photos and try to get, you know, audition or get an autograph. And then somebody else shows up. It just got weird. And not really in a good way for me. It's one of the few spots in the movie that I just didn't really get.
Like I said, next week's movie could put this in a whole
perhaps,
other light.
Perhaps. Oh, speaking of scenes involving couples, the gag where Barris tries to help a woman being abused by her husband, only to be assaulted by the woman and her husband, was originally done in a Buster Keaton film called Our Hospitality.
And I'm sure we've seen that reviewing movies on this show
a few times
already.
And then, of course, we get to the climax of the film. He decides he's had enough. He goes to the airport, says, you know, I just want to go to the biggest desert in the world and, you know, to the middle of it. The guy working at the ticket desk recommends Morocco. He goes to Morocco, walks out into the middle of the desert, sits down, and a helicopter shows up. Didlow comes out of the helicopter, says he brought some people. The USC marching band shows up. Damn near fell out of my chair. Fucking USC marching band in the middle of the desert. And then, as I said before, everybody who associated with the show, they do this musical number in the desert where everybody takes turns singing to Chuck.
And just the song they're doing too is really funny. Don't get up, you know, not for me at least, but if you're going to.
Basically saying, you know, yeah, go ahead and walk off and, you know, screw my career or screw my life in some way. You know, kind of criticizing him for just thinking about himself.
Right.
And we heard Gene the Dancing Machine's voice.
Yeah.
He spoke in that scene.
He had a couple lines of the song.
Well, yeah, it's a good thing he danced instead of sang.
Well, he was just like a stagehand or something. Yeah.
The dancing was fun to watch. The singing was a bit tragic, but, you know, it wasn't his thing.
The dancing was just like this little shuffle.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there was nothing, you know, he wasn't Brushnikov exactly.
Well, of course. And then Chuck, of course, decides to come back, and we get this nice extended montage of, they didn't feel like clips. They felt like it was specifically shot for the movie. These various performances on the Gong Show. Loved the Vatican Rag. A priest and three guys dressed as nuns doing this song called the Vatican Rag. And then a long set by the Unknown Comic that was probably the dirtiest thing he's ever done. And it pretty much closes out there.
Yeah.
On to sequels and remakes?
On to sequels and remakes.
Obviously, no room for a sequel or a remake. I don't think you could remake this out of context.
Yeah, I think any attempt to remake this should be shot on sight.
Mm-hmm. I would kind of like to see the show come back with the right host. I have no idea who the right host would be.
Hey, Dave Attell is a pretty...
He was a good choice.
Pretty strong choice. You know, even the dude back in the 80s, I mean, he wasn't like... He wasn't exactly memorable, but he wasn't bad either.
I don't remember either of those names. I don't remember actually ever watching those attempts.
Really?
Yeah. And I remember the original with Barris. I don't really remember any other versions of it.
The guy's name was Don Blue.
Okay, the name vaguely rings a bell, but I can't put a face to it. On to Brains.
On to Brains.
Aside from that little bit where it got a little weird for me, which isn't really a criticism because I like weird, I loved it, especially the clips. Like I said, they bought it a brain. I gotta go 5.
I do too. This movie is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
It's not even that well put together because mm-hmm. I mean, it is really just an excuse to do like rarities and outtakes. Yeah.
It's basically a compilation of sketches and clips. Very but raw, but also very ahead of its time.
Right. This show had so much shit going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. That its outtakes deserve to be released.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about having like Pee Wee Herman and Danny DeVito and all these crazy people, I just like the gags like Tony Randall coming out like that and everything too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, 5 brains for me too.
All right, and what have we learned?
We learned that feelings, nothing more than feelings, trying to forget my feelings of love.
And I learned, teardrops, rolling down on my face, trying to forget my feelings of love. Alright, so until next time, we'll be continuing our tribute to the late, great Mr. Barris with Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which, as you said, may explain a few things.
Yes. I think we did want a two-parter for Christopher Lee, didn't we?
Did we? I'll have to go back and check.
We may have, but other than that, I don't think that he tributes have merited a two-parter.
Was Dracula the tribute to Lee?
There were, I think we did. Oh,
because I know we did Dracula around 249 it was.
And we did Wicker Man too.
Well, that was way before we did Dracula though. Anyway, until then, go to zombietakeout.com. Check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And of course, if you enjoy the show, please give us some word of mouth. Spread the word. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. Somewhere in the 320s it ends.
yeah, we've got a lot planned still.
I think Tokyo Fish Attack, our next anime, is the last one on the list. I'm not 100% sure of that. Also, if you have a movie you'd like to hear us review, leave us a voicemail or leave it in a comment on an episode. And of course, you'll find the recommendations list. There was no question going into this one. I mean, there was a question, but I was really hoping it would make the rec list.
I had seen this before.
Okay.
Like late at night, and not, of course, entirely sure what I'd seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really the show and everything, but I'm like, they made a fucking movie? It was like USA in the middle of the night,
right?
And it was kind of censored.
Uh-huh.
So I knew I was going to enjoy this.
Also, in the show notes, I'm going to include a playlist from YouTube of, I think, 20-something full episodes of The Gong Show.
You're also going to include feelings.
Of course.
Feelings of love.
Yeah, I had to fit more in. Of course, you can email us, zombietake@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
We'll be right back next week with more stuff.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Feelings. Nothing more than feelings. Trying to forget my feelings of love.
Whoa, 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 feelings. Whoa, whoa.